Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Thank you, Tom, and Merry Christmas, listeners. This is Jeannie St. John Taylor, and I'm here with my co-host, Maxine Marcellini. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, Jeannie. How is your pre-Christmas preparations going?
Well, actually, you know, my Christmas is basically over. My kids just all left. We already had our Christmas. My daughter-in-law wanted to go back to the Dalles and have a white Christmas because snow is coming just with their family.
Yeah.
And I said, I think that's a wonderful idea because most of us don't get Christmases just alone with our little immediate family ever. Mm-hmm. We go to in-laws. And so I thought it was a wonderful idea. And we're happy here.
Well, and just to have snow for Christmas, that would be fun.
Isn't that fun? Oh,
especially for the
so
little ones.
Fun.
They'll enjoy it.
Yes. Oh, and we loved having them here. We opened our presents yesterday. It was just, it was Christmas. It was fine. I loved it. So
you,
Maxine,
have got a very special tree that you put a picture of at your house.
Yeah.
And you put a picture on the KRVR site, and I'd like to hear a little bit about that tree because it's a tree that just about anybody could do. You tell me it's simple. So
it is the simplest, easiest tree I've ever put up. I just have a fake tree. I hate to use that word, an artificial tree. Sitting on a table. It's probably about 4 feet tall, so I can't reach the top when it's on the table. But I like the artificial tree because it's easier to do what I did. So there's the wire, the ribbon that you see in the picture going down it, that red. It's just wide mesh ribbon you can get at any craft store. I got it on sale for $3.89, I think, at Michael's. So that's how much I spent on that tree this year, is $3.89. And all I have done is just set family photographs that have been taken in the last year, and you could do a long ago with relatives, whatever. And I call it our family tree. And the kids actually have all really loved it. And they look at the photos and can change the photos. I have a stack of photos under the tree since it's on a table, and they can just take some off and put other ones on if they want to. And it's not the most beautiful tree, but it's very attractive. And it has so much meaning because Christmas is all about family secondarily and all about Jesus first, but Jesus is about love. And so the family tree is love of family, and of course the tree signifies Jesus' birth. So it's love of Jesus, love of family. You could put others on it too. I just had family this year, so
it
was
fun. Well, I think it's nice to just do the family because that makes it quite personal to your tree. Years ago, I used to do the little gingerbread people, and I would make one for every person in the family and hang those on the tree. That was took a little bit more labor because of baking the cookies and then decorating them, and we'd use a garlic press to make the hair and put the, oh my goodness, the frosting and things. And the you've got to remember to use the straw to put the hole in the dough before you bake it. Cookie dough, and then you string the ribbon through that. So, but then I'd give the ones that weren't in our immediate household in a box, wrapped up in a box, and let them take them home for their tree. But that became quite a tradition for a long time for me, but I haven't done that in a while now.
You said a little more work. That's I pick up a photograph and put it on the branch. I think yours was a lot more work.
Well, a lot more work,
yeah.
But Yeah. I had to, once the kids left home and I didn't have the helpers like I had before to do all that pressing of the garlic hair and everything, it became a lot of work for me. So that was not happening anymore.
Exactly. It takes hours and hours to do that. It's wonderful. I love it, but I haven't done that. Mm-hmm. So,
but anyway, a family tree. Perfect family way to
tree.
Do it, and anybody can do it.
And there's a variation. If you have a real tree, my friend Barbara Martin suggested using clothespins to clip the photos and then hanging the clothespins on the tree. And she also said she thought it might be nice to spray the photos gold. I agree. And I said you could put back-to-back photos. So if it rotated, it doesn't move the way I've done it. But if you've got them in a clothespin, it might rotate. So then you've got two for one. So we had a good time. Yes. Maxine, we wanted to kind of make this more about Jesus than family even, because this is about the Lord. So what was that thing we were going to talk about? I don't know.
Well,
I didn't know about this until a couple years ago, really.
Yeah, it has a whole lot to do with Bethlehem and the Christmas shepherds and
doesn't
that
it?
Setting. And you have come up with some very interesting facts surrounding the Messiah. So why don't you start us off with what you have learned as you looked into the shepherds?
Well, in Micah 4:8, there's a prophecy that says that the Messiah would be revealed from the tower of the flock. And that's called Migdal Eder, M-I-G-D-A-L, Eder. E-D-E-R. We don't know for sure we're pronouncing that right, listeners. We're just guessing that we are. And it says, we guess at all our work, except I know Maxine is correct, and Jeannie.
No. Not when it comes to some of these old-time words.
No. I meant when I said your name, I know I'm saying it right.
Oh, well, my name, yeah, you did that good.
I did that quite well. Okay. Yeah. The verse is, "And you, O tower of the flock, hill of the daughter of Zion, to you it shall come, the former dominion shall come, the sovereignty of the daughter of Jerusalem." That's Micah 4:8, and that's in the NRSV. And what it's talking about when it says tower of the flock, you want to tell them a little bit about that, Maxine? Let's take turns, because you know as much as I do.
Well, I don't know this story as much as you do, so I think it'd be better if you just proceed with it, because I've not really studied up on it as you have here. I know of it, but I don't know
there's a watchtower in most of the fields, like the shepherd's fields, and there were watchtowers in a lot of the vineyards around. And so there's a tower, or there was a tower in Bethlehem. And when Rachel died, and this is from Genesis 35:19-21, so Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrathah, which is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar at her grave. It is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. And Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. And so he went just a short distance and pitched his tent. So Rachel is buried there. That's where Bethlehem is. That's where David was also born. And the people, the shepherds who worked in and around the Tower of Eder, were very special shepherds. They were the same shepherds that raised the flocks, the sacrificial lambs that were to go into the temple in Jerusalem, which was only about 3 miles from the Tower of Eder, 3 miles from Bethlehem. So these shepherds are out, and the sheep are out all year round in the fields there. And you know that because they're out at the time of Passover, which is in April, and that's the rainy season. So they take a special care of them in those in those flocks. So those are the shepherds, they surmise, that the angels came to when they announced Jesus' birth. So those are the shepherds that would have gone to the temple, and they would have, I would imagine, don't you think they would have told people, Maxine, what they had seen? When the angel comes to them and says, the old.
Well, I don't imagine they would have been real quiet about it. And
I wouldn't think.
When you find Christ, you usually get kind of excited.
Yeah.
It's something that you want to share with others, and they might have waited until they saw, you know, and just followed along obediently to start with and caught up with that star to say, what is this? What's going on here? And then once they saw it, I'm sure they just weren't the same after that.
Yeah, and I would imagine, I mean, if it had been me and I saw angels in the sky who said, behold, that means, hey, this is really important. You know, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be for all people. If I had seen that and if I had heard that, I personally couldn't keep my mouth shut about it. Could you?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think they would have gotten real excited about that.
Yeah,
just the fact that the meaning that's connected with the places where Jesus was revealed and his birth, it just carries a lot of weight. You know, and most of us don't really connect with that until we hear it told, like we're telling today, that it's more than just Bethlehem. This is where the shepherds who were doing the sacrificial lamb and tending them were staying. And Jesus came to be the sacrifice for sin.
Exactly.
So it all fits once you start putting the pieces together how God just lines things up perfectly. It just amazes me how you can connect the words that you read in the Bible to the prophecies that were declared about Christ.
Everything is so perfect in the Bible. It's like, it always amazes me, the genealogies. You tend to think they're so boring, but really it's like 14 generations from Abraham to Jesus, I think it is, and 14 generations from, you know, however that works, I can't remember, but it's 14 generations two different times, exactly. And Exodus says that when the Israelites came out of Egypt, it was on that exact day that God had reserved for them to come out. I don't know what that means exactly, but he does everything exactly and precisely.
Yeah, with that exact word going on there.
Exact. Yeah, that's why I don't really get too concerned about much of anything, because God is sovereign. Adonai means sovereign, and Yahweh means God. Adonai Yahweh. Adonai Yahweh. I pray that. Sometimes just that. God, you are sovereign. Adonai Yahweh. Yeah.
So here I've got your 14 generations in Matthew 17.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thus, there were 14 generations in all from Abraham to David,
there you
14
go.
From David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. So there's
three
14.
And that makes sense. I think, you know, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's a lot of threes in the Bible, too.
Yeah. The sevens multiplied, and now we've got these 314s.
Yeah.
So the generations,
and
it all ties together.
Yeah. Maxine and I are always just oohing and aahing about this stuff.
So
we love it.
Okay. You know, it's just wonderful to think about the birth of Christ and to realize, at our church they've been talking about how Luke, through the book of Luke, how Luke was not a Jew. He was someone who set out to prove Jesus with who he was, and he started talking with the eyewitnesses and the people that were in that age at the time who really knew Jesus, who saw the events. He spoke with some of the disciples, and he spoke with the eyewitnesses. And so he came to the conclusion that, yes, Jesus is the Messiah and worthy of our trust in him as our Lord. So it's amazing to me how people can believe more in what man says than they can in the proof that Jesus actually lived, walked this earth, and died for our sins and fulfilled prophecy as Scripture had related it. So it takes more faith, I think, to believe the falseness of it. And one of the things they've put in Times Square right now is the atheists have paid to have this done. They wanted to keep the Mary and Christmas and debunk the myth. Well, the Mary is the picture of Santa Claus, and the myth is the picture of Christ. So they've got it all backwards, but they are wanting to believe the lie, and they will cause others to fall on that path too, which is very heartbreaking.
You know what, so. I think it was Josh McDowell that I read, maybe in one of his Evidences of Christianity books.
Yep.
He said he's never found it, maybe it was somewhere else, but he said he's never found anybody who really couldn't believe, but it's because they did not want to believe. And I think that's probably, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because almost every society has to agree, and over time and thousands of years, they've always known there was something bigger than them that made it all happen. But they didn't necessarily always know who that God really was.
Yeah.
But when Christ came along, and, you know, we have him revealed, which is wonderful. So, and getting on with our little Christmas idea of this program today, you had a very special story that you wanted to tell about a bride doll dress that you received. And when we talked about this, I distinctly remember receiving my bride doll, loving her as a child, and I could not believe I'd gotten a bride doll. My aunt had sent it to me, and she sent one for each of my sisters that Christmas, and, you know, we just had a doll that pretty.
For people who are younger than us, they don't understand, and I'm really not sure I understand either, but they don't remember that a bride doll was like a Cabbage Patch Kid during the Cabbage Patch Kid days, and it was like the most important toy. Every girl wanted a bride doll, but they were very expensive, and you couldn't do it. And so what I did is I wrote this story. It's based on a true story. My mom... Well, I won't give it away. It's a very touching story. Shall I start?
Yeah, go ahead and read it, because it is a really, really sweet story.
Yeah, it is. And it's basically true. The details are changed. I pressed my face and mittened hands against the dime store window, yearning for the bride doll in the shimmering white gown. The window felt cold against my skin, but the desire inside me burned so hot, I wondered if I might melt right through the thick glass to touch her satin skirt. Even the beauty of the snow sparkling around me like diamonds couldn't compare to her. "Emily," Mama whispered, "be careful not to smudge the glass." "I'm sorry." I stepped back and slipped my hand into Mama's. "It's just that she's so beautiful. I wish..." I didn't dare ask. Only a king could afford a doll so wonderful. Mama's eyes clouded, and she finished the thought for me. "Honey, I wish we could buy her for Christmas, but we can't afford her. Besides, you have Isabel. She's a pretty doll." "I know." I hoped I hadn't made Mama feel bad. "Anyway, it would probably hurt Isabel's feelings if I got another doll." Though my brain told me dolls couldn't have feelings, I actually believed they did have feelings. I felt a little disloyal to Isabel for wanting the bride doll so desperately. I knew it would upset her if she knew. "Remember what today is?" Mama asked. "Yes." A sizzle of excitement tingled down my spine. "Your anniversary." Every year, we celebrated Mama and Papa's wedding anniversary as a family. Mama would cook a fancy dinner complete with anniversary cake. Then she'd go put on her wedding dress, and Mama, Papa, Joshua, and I would all look at pictures and relive their wedding day together. We looked forward to it almost as much as Christmas. Mama tugged me away from the bride doll. "We better quit window shopping and get home to fix dinner." With one last glance at the bride doll, I hurried after Mama. By the time Papa arrived home from work, the aroma of baked chicken filled the house. A cake decorated in white frosting stood in the center of the lace-covered table. I sent Papa and Joshua to wait at the bottom of the stairs while I lit the candles and started the wedding march on the radio record player. Then I scooped up Isabel, and we hurried to join them. "We're ready, Mama," I called out. My eyes swept up the stairs, and I hugged Isabel against me in anticipation. Mama emerged from the dim hallway above and descended slowly in her wedding gown, stepping in time to the music exactly like she had years earlier. Pearls edged the scalloped neckline and formed delicate flowers on her bodice. Her long satin skirt trailed behind her down the stairs. Papa gasped, "Oh, Gladys, you're as beautiful as the day we married." After dinner, we sat scrunched together on the couch looking at slides. when Papa came to the shot of Grandma Irene stitching seed pearls onto the bodice of Mama's dress before the wedding, Mama's eyes pooled with tears. Look at those gnarled fingers. Her arthritis hurt the whole time she sewed my dress. We paused for a moment at the picture of the ring bearer while Papa told about how the little boy dropped Mama's ring and rolled it under a pew. We all giggled together. Then, after the picture of Papa and Mama cutting the cake, we traipsed over to the table to cut the anniversary cake. "Is Christmas tomorrow?" Joshua asked in the middle of a mouthful of cake. Oh, Papa laughed. "Don't talk with your mouthful," I said, mildly surprised Mama was letting him get away with bad table manners. "Christmas isn't for 2 more weeks," Mama told him. "Tomorrow we decorate the house, then we shop." At the word shop, my mind flicked back to the bride doll, and a hollow longing seeped into my heart. That night I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking about the doll. And when I got up to use the bathroom, I saw a slit of light edging the bottom of Mama's sewing room door. Mama was sewing Christmas presents, probably for me, but she couldn't possibly be making anything I wanted. Nothing but the bride doll would make me happy this Christmas. The next morning was Saturday. Papa set up a tree in the living room, and the whole house smelled like pine. Joshua and I hung ornaments on the branches while Papa strung lights and Mama baked sugar cookies. Then we all iced them together. "They will make lovely presents for the neighbors," Mama said, holding up a camel-shaped cookie with a silver sparkle eye and a red icing bow around his neck. "Wonderful presents," Papa said. He slid his arm around Mama's waist and beamed with pride. "It's a miracle the way Mama stretches my income. We live like kings." Mama blushed. I looked away. For the first time in my life, Papa's words sounded empty as the bride doll-shaped vacuum in my heart. Mama couldn't make Papa's money stretch far enough to buy the Christmas present I wanted. The next few days whirled by with busyness. Mornings, Mama helped Joshua and me shop for our cousins at the dime store. In the afternoon, yummy smells floated through the house as Mama baked apple pies to give to the aunts and uncles on Christmas Day. In the quiet evenings, while Papa read his Bible and Mama crocheted an afghan for Grandma Irene, I hugged Isabel and tried to forget about the bride doll. "I wouldn't want it anyway," I told Isabel. "I could never love another doll as much as I loved you." I hope she believed me. On Christmas morning, the smell of warm cinnamon rolls wakened me. An image of the bride doll from the store window flashed into my mind, and I pushed it away. I refused to let it ruin my day. Across the hall, I could see Joshua still sleeping soundly in his bed. I slipped my feet into pink fuzzy slippers and crept down the stairs. Mama and Papa lounged on the couch with their backs to me, sipping coffee. Mama's head rested against the circle of Papa's arms, and the tree lights twinkled just beyond them. The music of violins playing We Three Kings drifted from the record player. I sat on the bottom step watching them, listening to the in-and-out murmur of voices sprinkled with Mama's occasional giggle. Just looking at them made me happy. And in that instant, I knew Papa was right. We did live like kings. Actually, we lived better than kings because no amount of money could buy the love we shared. I bounded over and threw my arms around their necks. "Merry Christmas!" Laughing, Papa pulled me onto their laps, and they both hugged and kissed me. We snuggled on the couch, smiling at each other, and for a long time, nobody said anything. Finally, Papa said, "Well," in a voice that told me to expect a surprise. I glanced at him, but he just stared at the Christmas tree instead of looking at me. I followed his gaze to the base of the tree. Nestled among the branches, near the floor stood Isabel, dressed as a bride in shimmering white satin. Seed pearls edged the scalloped neck of her wedding dress and formed delicate flowers on her bodice. For a moment, I sat frozen. I couldn't breathe. Isabel's dress looked exactly like Mama's. Then I remembered the light under Mama's door, and I understood. Mama had cut up her wedding gown for me. As though in a dream, I walked over and knelt to stroke Isabel's satin skirt. Slowly I turned to look at Mama. Tears trembled on her long dark lashes, but I knew she wasn't sad. "What will we do for the anniversary celebration?" I whispered. "We've got that all figured out," Papa said. "Mama will walk down the stairs carrying Isabel, and that will be almost like wearing the dress herself." I flung myself into Mama's arms and buried my face in her hair, feeling the warmth of her skin breathing her rose-scented shampoo. "You made Isabel more beautiful than the doll in the store window," I whispered. "And you are the most wonderful mother in the whole world. I love you."
Oh, what a beautiful story.
And my mom really did that.
Yeah.
She really did that.
One of the true things in that story, her name is
Isn't
Gladys.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh, yeah. It just makes me think, oh.
No, what a blessed family.
We want to get to your story about what your friend did to make the grandkids remember Grandpa at Christmas, and then I want to hear your poem. Yeah. So go ahead.
We'll at least get to the story about the grandpa. This one's called Christmas Without Grandpa, and it kind of fits our story this year because we've got a Christmas without a grandpa this year in our family, too. So Christmas is supposed to be a happy time, but how could Christmas be happy without Grandpa Clay? Donna's family had always counted on him to play Santa for their 11 grandchildren. Now he was gone, taken to heaven at only 58, and nothing could change the fact that Grandpa wouldn't be with them this year. You know, God called him home. Heaven may have celebrated, but sadness fell upon those who loved him. Grandpa's death was especially upsetting for the little ones. He was more than Grandpa to four of them. He was the man pinch-hitting his daddy in the absence of their own father. He often met the children at the bus stop after school or took them to baseball practice. They loved to take turns going to work with Grandpa. Clay was never too busy to listen or capture a moment to teach his grandchildren life lessons, like getting busy with a chore instead of being angry, or hitting or saying bad words. He made it a point to invest time in his grandchildren, telling each one just how special he or she was, just how delighted he and Grandma had been the day each one was born. His role in the family can't be measured with words or money. His presence was truly priceless. And to his friends, Clay was just as uplifting. Yet many of us heard him say, "If the Lord takes me home today, I'm ready." But as December approached, Grandma Donna felt the knot in her stomach growing. Christmas Eve would be so very different this year. Grandpa always loved Christmas. His job was to pass out the gifts. With ease, he had brought laughs to the children's faces. Would the laughs even happen this year? If the first Christmas without him was to be remotely okay, Donna knew it was going to be up to her to push her grief aside and do something happy for the grandchildren. Clay would want it that way. But what could she do? She began to pray, just like she and her husband had done so many times before. Only now she was alone with the Lord. What can be done to make a new role for Grandpa this year? An idea came to mind, a creative way to brighten their holiday season. She remembered the closet, the one she shared with her husband. It was still full of Clay's shirts. Maybe with a little help, there was a way a part of Grandpa could be given to each grandchild. She quickly thought of her good friend Louise, an expert seamstress, and made a phone call. "What a great idea," Louise said. "I'll be happy to help you." Keeping her idea a secret from the family, she carefully selected the shirts her husband had worn the most from the closet, the shirts the children would remember. She took them to Louise. For several days, Louise cut out patterns and lovingly sewed together 11 special gifts of love. When I spoke with her, it was shortly after the Christmas holiday, and I asked her, "How did your family celebrate Christmas?" "We had a nice Christmas," Donna told me. "Preparations on Wednesday were hectic with our daughter Michelle working both Tuesday and Wednesday. Her four kids were with me and very helpful. They did so much in food preparation and setting up the tables and chairs. 12-year-old Drew even brought the fixings for his favorite jalapeno poppers, made them and baked them to add to our Christmas Eve dinner. He was so proud." And as Donna spoke, my heart was warmed, but there was more to tell. "We always do our gift exchange on Christmas Eve, leaving Christmas Day free for the Santa stockings and time for our daughter Marty's family to spend with her husband's relatives. We talked about how we all missed Clay so very much, The last gift each child was given to open was a brightly colored gift bag. Tucked inside every bag, in between the tissue wrap, was a memory of Grandpa, a smiling Grandpa Bear designed by my friend Louise out of Clay's favorite shirts. The bears were a huge hit. The children loved them, hugged them, carried around the rest of the evening, and then slept with them that night. As I listened in on the little ones' conversations, they were discussing things like, "Oh, I remember Grandpa wearing this shirt. It was one of my favorites. Feel this fabric. When I touch it, it reminds me of Grandpa." I imagine the touch is very important sense in the memories of kids, since they were frequently hanging on to or being held by Grandpa. Now my son-in-law and my two daughters each want bears of their own, too. Mm-hmm. So Clay wasn't physically present for Christmas. Grandpa was still gone at Christmas, but he sure wasn't forgotten. These delightful bears plopped Grandpa smack dab in the middle of the Christmas celebration. And that's not all. The bears also allowed these 11 children new ways to express their feelings of grief. What a precious Christmas blessing. So that's my story of Christmas.
I love that.
I haven't quite done the Christmas bears, but I'm thinking of things. One of the things I plan to do this year is select things that are going to be meaningful to the grandchildren of things they did with Grandpa. Like, we have a kite that always went to Cannon Beach with us. It was Grandpa's favorite kite, and every year that kite was there. We probably owned this kite for 20 years or more. And as the kids came along, they all wanted to help fly that kite. So Nicholas, who's now 13, is going to be given the kite as his remembrance from Grandpa, and he's going to be the kite caretaker in the family now. And he'll think of it, and that'll be fun. And different things that the kids can get involved in. But I think it does help process when we allow them to have something special to remember. So that is my Christmas story for the year. And I hope that helps some who have had a loss this year, as we have. And I just find Christmas is happy, the happiest time of the year for some, but also a sad time for others. And we have to remember that and keep them in our hearts and in our prayers and do what we can to be uplifting to them. So
I love that story, Maxine. That you wrote it beautifully, but it's also a beautiful idea, and I love. Could you tell the listeners about the candy cane too? Do you mind?
Well, the candy cane we kind of covered last week.
Did we?
Last week's program. So my husband would always tell the candy cane story to the children at Christmas, and the meaning of that is in last week's program. So look at the archives if you got a minute, listeners, and listen in, and you'll catch that. And that blessing, because every part of the candy cane has a legend of Jesus in it too.
Yeah.
So, God bless.
Do you think we have time for your poem? It's not very long.
Well, my poem isn't necessarily Christmassy.
Okay.
But it's the one I did as a gift for Christmas last year, and
that's
I try
wonderful.
To do something special each year. But this one I titled "The Woman," and it could easily be interchanged and be called "The Man." But I'll read it as "The Woman," which I intended it to be given as gifts to my lady friends last year. So, the woman with the courage to do God's will can soar higher than thousands who chase after lofty dreams. The woman who says yes to the Lord gains his favor forever. From this day forward, she believes she will never walk life's streets alone, never fight another battle in her own strength, never again shed a tear and think no one cares. The woman who loves the Lord knows who she is. She is his daughter, a beloved princess, the child of the Most High King. In her heart, there is no doubt the counselor, defender, and comforter Jesus spoke of in the scriptures is real. Are you this woman? Are you this man? No.
I love that, too.
It's a good thing to ponder. Yeah.
It is. It is. Yeah. And, well, I think we've probably gone long enough, so we'll say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at JeannieSt.JohnTaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at the river. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.